This episode of Literary Treks is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Literary Treks. I am one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always these days, is Dan Gunther. Dan, how are you doing this week?
Matthew, I'm doing well. Up here in Canada, we had our long weekend just this past weekend, the week before you guys do down south, so a little rested up, ready to go this week.
I'm pretty jealous. I am so looking forward to the fact that I do not have to work on Monday. And in fact, the next weekend, going camping, so I don't have to work that Monday either. And, I need some relaxation. So I'm excited, so excited. But guys, you're not here to hear our cruddy, silly vacation plans. You're here to hear us talk about Star Trek books and comics and wow, do we have a ton of news today. First and foremost, we've got the brand new cover for Atonement. That's right, we've got three book covers to judge today. Dan, what do you think of this one? Because this is not something we've had in a while, honestly.
Well, looking at this cover, I have to admit, I had a 90s pop song start going through my head. Did you start thinking,
really?
I'm Blue, looking at this cover?
Ah, nice, nice. I'd start singing it, but we might lose listeners, so.
I thought about it, then I thought, I'm just going to say the title. I don't need to subject everyone to that.
it does have this very bluish tint to it. What do you think about the fact that we have Janeway on the cover, and in so many of the books recently, we've just been getting, I feel like, ship shots, and oh, that's catchy, ship shots. And, you know, here it's just the lone Admiral Janeway, and what I've got to say is a fantastic Admiral's uniform with a belt buckle that just won't quit.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty impressive belt buckle. I think it was on the Trek BBS. Someone was wondering if maybe she keeps mints in there or something. it's
her,
pretty impressive.
Yeah. I think that's where she keeps, you know, some sort of like either Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies or her Altoids.
Yeah.
So. That, or she has a very tiny phaser that Ooh. Hides in that belt buckle as well, you know, that she puts a few different things together, like from her belts or whatever, and pips and stuff, and it creates a phaser.
Yeah, that could be a pretty good kind of side thing to have, definitely in a pinch. it's pretty cool. I like the look of this. Obviously, the plot of the book is basically the trial of Janeway by these Delta Quadrant species. So it's a very thematically fitting cover with her kind of all alone facing judgment. It's pretty cool. I like the cover.
I can just imagine what I feel like is going through her brain in this picture is, where's my coffee?
Absolutely. There's coffee in that nebula, but, you know, I can't go near that nebula because apparently I'm on trial right now, so.
Yeah, can somebody get me out of this glass container of emotion? I like this cover. I think it's really nice to see one of the characters on there. Obviously, Admiral Janeway, you know, she is back, and what a great way to, I think, really celebrate that fact, and like you said, the theme of the book, and that this book is going to have a lot of resonance with her journey of, you know, coming back to life and kind of continuing to face the decisions that she made in the Delta Quadrant. And I'll be really interested to see how Janeway 2.0 deals with those repercussions now that she's gone through so much in the last couple of books and she's come back. So I'm really looking forward to this, and Kirsten Beyer never disappoints me. So
definitely. No, like you said, she never disappoints. And yeah, I have yet to read anything from her that is less than fantastic. So definitely looking forward to this one.
Well, the next book that we have, A Cover to Judge, is by Paula M. Block and Terry J. Erdman. They're doing their Star Trek costumes book that'll be coming out this fall, and the cover was released for this, and I do have to say, having the original TOS shirt, the Kirk-colored command uniform there, is brilliant. It looks so good, and it just kind of shows you, I think, even with the TV show back in the 60s, the quality, and you're immediately drawn to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing else costume-wise that screams Star Trek, so to have that kind of front and center on the book just makes sense to me. And yeah, it really shows where it all began, where it came from. And then we've got all these other really cool costumes at the bottom, and I thought, you know, a really good selection of just fascinating costumes and different things that Star Trek has done over the years. It's a pretty good cover for sure.
Well, the bottom there has Captain Picard from TNG with third season onward uniform.
Arguably just as iconic as the
exactly.
original for sure.
And gave us the fantastic Picard maneuver.
Definitely.
And then, of course, I would say just as iconic as any of these is the next, is Jeri Ryan as Seven of Nine in her silver uniform, which, I mean, became such an icon. I would say, honestly, I think the geek pinup for many Star Trek fanboys and fanboys all over the world during the 90s. I love the fact that from Deep Space Nine, you have represented Worf in his wedding attire, which looking very regal, very Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm. I really loved those costumes, his and Dax's, when they got married. That's pretty cool they included that, because I thought that was a good one.
We've got Spock from Star Trek IV, which is fantastic, and of course, him being in his return garb, so his Vulcan robes that he returned basically from the dead as well. So there's a lot of returning from the dead in these books. So we got Janeway, Spock. I mean, who's next?
Yeah, that's a good observation. Unfortunately, this version of him doesn't have the little torn piece tied around his ears that I thought was really cool, but, you know, it's still pretty
cool.
That's disappointing.
Or attempting to use a colorful metaphor, which is hard to do on the front of a book. And then from the new Star Trek series, the new JJ verse, we have Uhura in the deep sea diving outfit from Into Darkness. Now, I do have to ask you, of all the costumes, is this the best costume choice, do you think, from the JJ-verse? This most represents the work that they did on those films, or is it just because Zoe Saldana looks very nice in this uniform?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a bad costume, or that it's entirely representative of all the movies, but I can definitely give you a good answer as to why they picked that one, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much the same reason they picked Seven of Nine as well.
Yeah,
but this is fantastic. And I'm excited because, you know, Paula and Terry did the Deep Space Nine companion, which is one of the very best, if not the very best, Star Trek companion. They got to be on set and therefore got access that nobody else had. And I'm very excited to see what they do with this book and how they present these costumes and what went into all the work to put them together. This book is going to come out this fall, and it's going to be around $60 retail, but I'm pretty sure that if you go on Amazon, you could probably get it pre-ordered for less than that. So I'm excited to check this out. I love that we're getting every year a few more Star Trek nonfiction books, and I would suspect that next year we will probably get a few more of these as well, because of the fact that it is the 50th anniversary, and there is a lot to celebrate. So I'm very excited to see where they're going to kind of go with these nonfiction books specifically.
For sure. Yeah, we're not quite up to the heyday of, you know, the days when we were getting all the technical manuals and that sort of thing, but it's been a nice kind of ramping up of these sorts of books, and it's really good to see.
The very last book that we have a cover to judge is the very last book of the year, actually, which is Greg Cox's Child of Two Worlds. And Dan, what do you think of this book cover? Because a lot like the Voyager book cover that we had, this one has a nice promo of a character instead of a ship.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very simple. Like, the layout isn't overly complicated. You've got Spock in his the cage look with the old uniform, blue colored, as he looked when he was under Pike's command. And I have to say, it's a visually striking cover. I love the colors, and Leonard Nimoy's face front and center just really kind of pops and gives it this kind of just stark character look that just looks great. I'm excited for this book. I'm a huge Spock fan, and Greg Cox is a great writer. And this cover, I think, just shows us what we're going to get, a Spock story set in this time period.
I'm excited for this for a couple reasons. One, obviously, because of losing Leonard Nimoy, I think this is a fantastic way to end the year for Star Trek books. Second, I think that the artistic value of this cover is beautiful. Just the artwork alone is really well done. I love the color choices. Mm-hmm. I love that it looks like a painting, even though it could just be some Photoshop work. But it looks like art, you know, in the same way those Seekers covers, they're art, you know. And I like this artistic representation of Spock. And you even have there two different worlds. You have one at the top that's larger, and one around the side of his head that's smaller. So I really like the thought that's gone into this cover, and I think it's very striking, and it's something that when you see it, you're immediately going to be drawn to it, especially in the bookstore. Mm-hmm. And or if you were just, you know, checking out Star Trek books on, you know, iBooks or something like that. So I have to say that this is really well done, and I am very excited to be getting this book at the end of the year and seeing what Greg has in store for us, especially since we just, you know, there aren't a ton of books in that time period with Spock, and it's always nice to kind of see how they deal with that character when, you know, he was a little bit more shouty.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, what it really comes down to is, much like the Seekers covers, I would love to see this as a poster. I would love this on my wall. I think it'd be beautiful. So, yeah, I'm on board.
I completely agree with you. Having, you know, just maybe the Star Trek text at the top, or maybe just Child of Two Worlds without anything else. I mean, yes, this is great art, and it does harken back, I think, to some of those great covers that we got in the past. You know, I remember Chris and I did a long time ago Shadows in the Sun book, I love how those old hardcovers had actual, it's like somebody had oil painted for the cover, and I love those old covers like that, and I wish that we got more of them. The Star Wars books for the longest time with Bantam Run did the same thing. And I miss that, you know, and that's one of the things I think I've been so excited about with Seekers and the covers is that there's so much time and care going into it, you know. Mm. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, just people can tell, you know, it's so easy for anybody to slap something together in Photoshop these days, but an artist spending some time really crafting something, it says a lot. I mean, even for movie posters these days, heck, we just get pretty much a Photoshopped movie poster with characters from the movie instead of, you know, like a Drew Struzan Star Wars style poster.
Right.
You know, that just, it pulls you in. So I love to see art coming back in this way because it's important. We kid on the show that we judge a book by its cover, but we really do.
Yeah, and everybody does, for sure. It's what draws somebody to a book before anything else. And yeah, like you say, it's very, very important.
Yeah. So it's nice to see them taking some care. So for all of these, I think that they are going to be fantastic. And, well, you know, what a great thing. Some great books coming out. to get people, you know, this one is going to come out right after Christmas. The costumes guide we've got there coming out. What a great holiday gift for the Star Trek fan in your life. So perfect timing for those guys. Well, we do have a couple of comics to talk about for you. And the first one is Ongoing 45. And we are wrapping up the Eurydices series that had started, which was a three-part series here, as the Enterprise is finally on its five-year mission and had been stranded in the Delta Quadrant. And this is the wrap-up. After Eurydices had sold out Kirk and the rest of the crew, what did you end up thinking, Dan, about the way they kind of wrapped up the story?
I actually really enjoyed this story. I kind of like how much more time was given to this story than to the original kind of behemoth story that led into it. I mean, we kind of knew going in that Eurydice would redeem her character and save them. But the actual execution of that, I thought was really good. I enjoyed it. I knew where the story was going a lot of the time, and it was a little bit predictable, but it brought me along for the ride. I liked where it went, and I enjoyed it. How about you? What did you think?
I think I thought exactly the same thing. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was just pretty good. I enjoyed the wrap-up. The fact that, you know, she helped the crew was very predictable. It was interesting, obviously, the reason that she was doing it. But mm-hmm. again, I felt like that was kind of predictable that, okay, I already feel like this character is going to help out, you know, Kirk and the crew. It's probably because she has a reason that she's working for these people beyond the fact that she's trying to make money.
Right.
Because, you know, the character is just never played like that. Now, I think it would have helped maybe if she had come off in the first two completely kind of jerky and kind of put out that she's helping the Enterprise and that she doesn't really care. She's just looking to make something off of them, as if they had said, hey, we'll trade you this, this, or this. I think that would have helped the storyline just a little bit so that you weren't so much in the mindset, well, she's just going to help them in the end.
Mm-hmm. Made it a bit more of a surprise, a little bit more.
Yeah, or at least tried to. So, mm-hmm. But on a whole, it's not a bad story. And I'm interested to see where they keep going with this. I mean, this is the point of this where we are really discovering the unknown. And even though, you know, they're still in the Delta Quadrant, and who knows how they're going to get back, I'm interested to see kind of what they do, if they'll run into any of the Voyager races that they ran into and use them in their own way, the same kind of thing that they did with the Q Gambit. There's a lot of different areas you can go with this. I just hope that they'll continue to expand their horizons of what this crew can run into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of new directions that they can go in for sure. But there's also a lot of old directions they seem to want to go in. I mean, Kirk gets to kiss the woman at the end. So, you know, they're not straying too far from what we're used to with Star Trek.
That is true. That is true. And you know, what I thought, too, would have been really interesting is to have Eurydices join the Enterprise for a while, a little bit like Neelix did with Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And really get to explore that new character. Although I guess they probably don't want that because then her and James Kirk would be hooking up. And I'm pretty sure their goal is to find a way to kind of play the romance between him and Carol somehow.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Depending on where they want to go with the new movie.
Yeah. She would be a lot less annoying than Neelix, though. So
this is true. She was already less annoying than Neelix, so two thumbs up for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that is setting the bar pretty low, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when people call you the Jar Jar Binks of the Star Trek universe,
Ooh. Yeah,
it's hard to, you know, live down that reputation. Well, the next comic that we have, Dan, to talk about, and the last one, is the newest New Visions comic, which is Resistance, where the original series crew runs into the Borg. Now, what did you think of this? Because I remember us talking about it thinking, I don't know how you do this without messing it up.
I actually really enjoyed this one, as it turned out. I thought kind of, you know, introducing the Borg this early in a way, well, I mean, they did on Enterprise, but I felt like that worked. They did a good job with that. But I was thinking like, okay, the Borg in every single time period outside of the time period they're supposed to be in, that's getting a little ridiculous. But in retrospect, they did it quite well here. I mean, the original crew never really knows what they're up against, and it's kind of left to the audience who knows Star Trek to really piece together and obviously know what the threat is. And that's where the story kind of derives most of its tension from. The original crew is really in the dark as to what this, you know, really powerful new threat is. And I think personally, the story works really, really well.
I think for the most part, my thought was this is the best you can do without ruining it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I still feel a little bit like you were talking about that. Okay, the Next Generation, they never had heard anything about that. There weren't any new records of the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like that, okay, if the Enterprise NX-01 had had experience with cybernetic beings like this, the Enterprise, the original Enterprise that we know from Kirk, had an experience with cybernetic beings like this, it would seem like they would be able to pull up those records and be like, well, Archer and, you know, Kirk both ran into something like this. We don't know what they're called, but we've definitely run into this before. Yeah. I think these are the same people. So it's the problem of really doing that. It's almost the retcon of that, you know, oh, Kirk, well, he met the Borg and faced them down, but he didn't really know who they were, and they were crazy Borg. So that's the way of kind of getting around the storyline. And again, I think John Byrne does the best you can possibly do without feeling like he totally ruined something.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's a little much.
Yeah. No, it is a really tough thing to do. And I mean, you know, my preference would be, you know, just maybe leave them alone and don't introduce the Borg into the original series. But if you're going to do it, then I think they, like you said, did the best that they could for sure. I kind of was thinking while I was reading this, and like this gets into kind of the fan theories and ridiculousness and stuff. But, you know, if you really want to kind of jam all of the continuity and canon together and try and make it fit, you know, there's like the hints of these things over the years, maybe some intrepid scientist kind of putting it all together and thinking, oh, this needs to be investigated. And that maybe led to the Hansons going off into the Delta Quadrant to look for this legend that's popped up every once in a while. But yeah, once you start getting into that, it gets a little bit fan wanky, I want to say. And yeah, it's tough to do for sure. But it was an enjoyable story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you said it best. If you're going to do this story, this really is probably the best you can do. And that means I think it's definitely worth checking out, because it was really interesting to see how they walked the line. And I think they walked the line very well in a very interesting way. And it made sense. It didn't feel just like, okay, we have to service the story somehow that Kirk and the rest of the crew never, you know, hear these people say what they are, or even really see them or anything like that. So I think they do a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. One kind of side effect I have to note is because most of the story takes place on the Enterprise Bridge, the art actually ended up looking pretty okay, because it was mostly just screen grabs from the show and rearranging people on the bridge. There are a couple points where they're down on the planet or, you know, on the asteroid and the gravity's kind of acting wonky. And I'm not exactly sure what Chekhov is doing at one point, kind of a somersault through the air or something. But
that's the Russian jig.
Ah, yes. So,
yeah, yeah. You just missed it. The Russians, you didn't know this, but they invented the jig in the first place, and that's that's what he was actually doing.
So. Well, it's pretty impressive. If that's one of the things that was invented in Russia, then well, I got to give Chekhov props. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it looked really, I mean, he pulls it off nicely. Well, Dan, I am very excited about tonight because a few years ago, a friend of mine challenged me to watch this British television show called Doctor Who, which I had seen before in the sense that, like, I knew of it out there, you know? And I sat down and I fell in love with it. I watched through the entire new series, got myself ready, was able to see the 50th anniversary in the theaters with fans and 3D, and then been following it ever since. And I saw this, you know, pretty close after starting Literary Treks, that there was a Doctor Who, Star Trek The Next Generation crossover called Assimilation 2?
Assimilation Squared? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's probably Assimilation Squared, but I like to do it as a question, like I'm a Monty Python. Assimilation 2? So I'm very excited that we were going to talk about this. This was a crossover series that happened in 2002, and obviously it involved the crew of the Enterprise D from Star Trek The Next Generation, as well as the Doctor from Doctor Who. This was the 11th Doctor, if you're wondering, with Amy and Rory Pond. And it did actually include a very nice little vignette with Kirk, the original Enterprise, and Tom Baker's Doctor. So there's a lot of great fan service here. And this was a 8-part series. We're going to cover the first omnibus, which covers issues 1 through 4. And this is written by Scott and Dave Tipton with Tommy Lee, and features art by J.K. Woodward, which we've seen in some other great Star Trek comics. And so, Dan, you had mentioned, and I thought that this was a really interesting thing to talk about, that this comic takes place in that post-Wolf 359 Federation. And it really kind of drives the storyline on the Next Generation side of what they're doing. What did you think about this? Because I thought where it takes the Federation was really interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting and something we've not really seen before. You know, following the best of both worlds, like, it was a big blow to the Federation and they lost a lot of ships. But at the same time, on the show, you know, we don't get a lot of talk about, you know, what goes into building the Federation back up or how they coped with that. I think Shelby has a line at the end of that episode, something along the lines of, oh, we'll have the fleet back up within a year or something. So, I mean, it sounds like not a big deal, but in this story, you know, we see this post-Wolf 359 Federation with, you know, scarce resources. And one thing that really kind of made me raise my brow a little bit was this mining colony, the Federation pushing its miners to meet these quotas in order to build the fleet back up and, you know, pushing safety guidelines in order to do it. It seemed a little bit kind of out of place for what we've seen of Star Trek, but it was interesting. You know, I like when stories take us maybe to uncomfortable places or places or things we don't really think about or talk about in this utopia of Star Trek. So it was a little interesting, if a little bit making me question it just a little bit.
Well, and what was really interesting too is that it kind of dovetailed, I think, very nicely into what we'll kind of see in Deep Space Nine. You know, and so this is midway point here through the Next Generation. We're moving towards, you know, that feeling of Deep Space Nine. I just liked that we were seeing a picture of kind of some of the things the Federation is going to be struggling with the Dominion War.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I think, fascinating to think that there are times like this. Wolf 359, huge battle, lots of ships lost, lots of lives. Nothing quite as large, obviously, as the Dominion War, what we saw, but it's got to be hard to recover from something like this. You know, you can't just do it, like you said, with Shelby and recover within a year. You know, shipbuilding takes time. And it takes resources. And I thought that was very interesting that they are on this planet They are mining this planet, and they are pushing their people and safety regulations in a way that's not probably the best idea, but because they are scared of another Borg attack coming, which they should be, because First Contact's going to happen. You know, the Dominion War is going to be around the corner. They don't even know that yet. So it was really interesting to see that, yes, even the Federation at this point, especially after Wolf 359, and we don't see it a lot on TNG, but we can tell by the time Deep Space Nine rolls around, there's a different feeling in the air in the Federation. And it's not quite as happy-go-lucky as it was when, you know, the Enterprise was doing nothing but ferrying dignitaries around from planet to planet. You know, we faced an enemy that we don't know how to stop.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's very true. And, you know, in no way is this point proven more than in this story, when obviously we get a huge invasion by the Borg with some unlikely allies from a different universe, franchise. I don't know what the terminology would be. An alternate franchise. I'm not sure.
An alternate franchise. Yes. and that's really interesting because just the way the comic is laid out is very well done. It starts with the Borg and the Cybermen from Doctor Who invading Delta IV, which is the Deltan planet, if you weren't aware. So just like Ilea and those characters. And it is it just starts off with a bang, you know, literally. They are taking over this planet quickly, and then it jumps to, you know, the storyline with the Doctor. And you're kind of like, what's going on? But I love the way that they kind of set up where the story is going and then kind of tell you the backstory of how we get there. I felt like, to me, that was really well done, and it worked. Did it work for you?
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed that. It's kind of something I notice a lot of television shows and movies, particularly these days, seem to be doing, is doing this non-linear storytelling, like opening things with a bang and showing like some big huge piece of action, and then, oh well, this is how we get there now let's fill in the blanks. And, you know, the cynical part of me might be saying something like, oh, attention spans these days, they need that hook before they'll get invested. But I think also, just as a storytelling device, it's a neat way to do things. It does introduce that hook really early on and gets you really excited and gives you a little bit of dramatic irony that you know something bad's going to happen and the characters don't. So, it's a neat way to introduce this story, and it certainly got my attention early on.
Did you find it a little odd, though, that Picard and the crew, I mean, Riker and Data and Worf, all almost drowned in this mine? They are mining on a water planet that only has mountains that rise above it. And so, obviously, their biggest worry is that they're going to have a leak because of all of the safety protocols that they've kind of been skirting. There's a leak. I mean, they almost die, and they get back to the Enterprise. They talk about the safety issues, yada, yada, yada. And Picard's like, oh, we just got the new holodeck installed. You should go check it out, number one. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
What? Go play on the holodeck. You almost died, but you're fine. It's just a mere flesh wound.
And this is something that, like, when I first thought of that whole thing about the state of the Federation and post-Wolf 359, where you have scarce resources and everyone's, you know, working hard to rebuild the fleet. And I was thinking early on, like, well, they play on the holodeck on the Next Generation, and they don't seem to be really hard done by and that kind of thing. And then a page later, they're let's go play on the holodeck. Oh, well, okay.
Exactly. Not only the holodeck, but they've given us an upgraded holodeck. So yeah, everything's
so they're spending
much
resources on that. Like, how bad could it be, really?
Yeah. It was hilarious. And that is where the Doctor's timeline and the Next Generation timeline meet, because they are on a Dixon Hill adventure, and Rory and the Doctor and Amy are walking around, and they run into Riker and Data and Crusher, and of course, they both don't know what's going on until Riker decides, let's shut this down. And, of course, the Doctor and his blue box are still there.
I actually thought that was really clever, because, and the way they introduce it is the Doctor and his companion and her husband, they're traveling to San Francisco, they think, and they appear in San Francisco and check it out for a little while, and then they see Data, and you're thinking, oh man, there's a time travel thing. Somehow the Enterprise crew has gone back to San Francisco. And then you realize, oh no, they've gone to visit the holodeck and they're actually on the holodeck. I thought that whole just kind of piecing it together and revealing it that way was really clever and pretty cool.
Well, that's when the Enterprise gets the memo, basically, hey, Delta IV is being attacked, but they're being attacked by these aliens, the Borg, and somebody else. We don't really know who they are. And the Doctor is walking through the Enterprise, and he mentions that Worf is a Klingon. And then he's weirded out because he's like, I remember this, but I shouldn't be remembering it. And I'm remembering that I'm remembering things now that I shouldn't be remembering. I don't know if that made any sense to anybody.
There are no knowns, but, and there are known unknowns. I don't. Anyway.
Exactly. Well, and this is where we get the cameo of Kirk and Tom Baker's Doctor, that all of the sudden, the Doctor just kind of freezes, and we go back in time to this point when the Enterprise is going to a research facility that they haven't heard from, that's in a nebula that has communication problems anyway, and they're going to check it out. And when they get there, everything kind of seems wrong. And that's when they find that there are Cybermen there, and the Tom Baker's Doctor helps them solve the problem with a little bit of gold dust from Kirk's communicator to stop the Cybermen. And then, of course, the 11th Doctor comes back and is like, I've been here before, which that was kind of nice. I liked that. That callback of how you kind of bring these two universes together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was kind of a nice little surprise, that little bit of a vignette with Kirk and his crew. I also loved how the style that it was drawn in was so completely different from the Next Generation portion of the comic. It was a really kind of neat stylistic choice on the part of the artists there.
That worked as well.
Yeah, it was really, it kind of, I don't know if I can explain exactly what I mean by this, but it almost took me like a page to realize, oh, hey, this is like a completely different comic in this comic.
And now for something completely different.
Exactly, yeah, we're going to be introducing British humor in here. But
exactly, yeah, it's perfect.
And the cameo by Tom Baker's Doctor was really cool. Now, this is kind of the point where I have to admit before all of our listeners, my geek credibility is going to kind of take a hit here. I've seen a little bit of Doctor Who over the years. And I think it kind of comes from me really wanting to be a completist and wanting to watch it all. And then you look at that and it's so daunting that it's really hard to do. So I've seen a little bit of the Tom Baker Doctor, a little bit of the early stuff, because I really wanted to watch it first. And then I finally just kind of started watching the start of the new series. So I have to admit, I've never actually even seen anything to do with the 10th Doctor, the 11th Doctor at all. So this is my first introduction to his character.
So did you find, as kind of being the newbie to Doctor Who, did you find this kind of strange, or were you able to follow it because you sort of understand how the Doctor works?
Yeah, I was able to follow it like as a very casual Doctor Who viewer. And I thought the character seemed really interesting to me and different from the Doctors that I have seen. So I really enjoyed it, and the whole premise was easy enough because I'm aware enough of Doctor Who to kind of get that part of it. But I'm just kind of curious, as someone who knows Doctor Who a lot better than me, like, how is this depiction of the 11th Doctor? Is it pretty accurate?
I have to say that reading this, the writers here, Scott and David and Tony, they nail the 11th Doctor's way of speaking. And I can hear him saying everything exactly as Matt Smith would portray it. Hmm. And the same thing with Amy and Rory. I can hear, you know, Karen Gillan, and I can hear Arthur Duvall saying these lines just as they would if they were on, you know, one of the seasons with Matt Smith as the Doctor. And it's so nice because I'm feeling this comic, you know, in the way that I wasn't feeling the crossover with the apes. This all makes sense, you know. As you said, you're familiar enough with Doctor Who, and I think that the understanding of that with the understanding of Star Trek and the temporal mechanics of both make this make sense, why mm-hmm. they might cross over somehow. And I really, really like that because it doesn't seem forced whatsoever, really, that all of a sudden, you know, the Doctor shows up in a Star Trek timeline, because why couldn't it? From what we know of Doctor Who and from what we know of Star Trek, they're just different universes, so why couldn't they cross over?
Well, that actually makes me really excited to kind of get to the Matt Smith episodes of Doctor Who, because I'm really digging his character in this story. I love the way he speaks. I love, the Doctor always seems to have a really unique way of thinking, but some of the things he says here, I just love the way he turns a phrase. And I'm loving this interaction. It makes sense to me. It feels like they're genuinely interacting. It's not forced in the way that I thought that, you know, Kirk and the apes and, you know, the whole, all of the characters in Planet of the Apes, that felt a little bit forced to me and just never really rang true. But this feels very genuine. From what I know of, you know, the Doctor Who universe, they're reacting as they would, and the TNG crew seem to be reacting exactly as I'd imagine they would as well. So it's working very well for me.
Yeah, I think that you're just spot on, and these writers have just kind of knocked it out of the park to make this work. And like you said, it doesn't feel like they're just shoehorning it in. You know, it feels all very natural. And especially I like the part of the story where Picard takes the Doctor and Amy and Rory to meet Guinan. And, you know, Guinan's always been this very mysterious character that Picard knows very little about but trusts implicitly. And they have this conversation. I thought it was so interesting because apparently Guinan's part Time Lord. so that's pretty cool. Or at least basically has the way of viewing the universe in much the same way that a Time Lord does. So, again, I thought that using the things from Star Trek and from Doctor Who that really kind of mesh together and just finding a way to interweave it, it felt smart. It felt like a great correlation, you know. Oh, Guinan. Well, of course she has these kind of mystical, strange powers that we don't necessarily understand. She's lived for a very long time, a little bit like the Doctor. The fact that they would be kind of equals a little bit made a ton of sense, and I really, really liked it. I felt like the story gel even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I have to admit, when I first read this, not something that I had thought about until they introduced Guinan, and I thought, oh, of course, that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, as much as we learn about Guinan, there's a lot about her that we don't know. For example, like her past dealings with Q, and why Q, of all people, seems a little bit afraid of her is something that's always kind of stuck in the back of my mind.
It's that kind of like weird cat thing she does with her claw hands, you know?
Exactly.
It's that. That's what she's afraid of.
Well, you know, if Whoopi Goldberg came up to me doing that too, I might be a little afraid as well. and also like the kind of insights she has when the timeline changes in yesterday's Enterprise, for example. Well, why does she have that awareness? What is it about her or her species that gives her that? And I like the exploration of that. I always liked whenever the Next Generation went there with her character and teased a little bit about it. So yeah, it makes total sense that she would get the Doctor, that she would mm-hmm. be on the same level as him in some ways, for sure.
And now for something completely different. A Guinan who is a Time Lord.
Excellent.
Well, the story kind of wraps up here in part one by them finding out that the Cybermen are actually too powerful for the Borg. And the Borg actually contact the Enterprise and ask for Locutus for his help. And the comic ends with basically Picard saying, "No way in hell is this happening." And so, and then to be continued where we'll go next. So I'm very excited, honestly, to see where this storyline progresses to, because I think that they've done such a great job of setting up the storyline. Like, I feel completely immersed in what's happening. I don't feel like it's forced. It feels completely natural, and I can't wait to see how they kind of resolve this storyline. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to when we can squeeze in, you know, part two for Literary Treks, because I want to find out what happens. And I'm like, do I just go read it, or do I wait till we're going to do the show? I don't know if I can hold off, man.
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel. I really like where this story ends. And again, they nail the characters. I mean, that is exactly the reaction I think Picard would have. Like, no way. Help the Borg? Are you kidding me? No.
Yeah, I'm not Janeway.
I've always actually wondered, like, if Picard were there when Janeway proposed, like, we make an alliance with the Borg, and, like, just have him at that meeting and see what his reaction would be. Like, are you kidding me?
No way in hell, Janeway.
I'm taking command of Voyager.
Exactly.
Yeah, no.
She is unfit for command.
Not gonna happen. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And it's very fascinating because I love this last image of Picard with his arms crossed saying, like, no, this is not gonna happen. And the doctor's looking shocked at him. And Riker behind him has this, like, yep, that's the captain I know. Look.
Could have told you that was coming.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, and he looks awesome. Pleased, like, yeah, no, we're not helping the Borg. Are you crazy? Yeah.
Well, and what I like is that, obviously, they're doing that thing where the Doctor doesn't completely understand the Borg, and Picard doesn't completely understand the Cybermen, and so they both have their opinions on what should be done from their own experiences, you know, and the Doctor's had these enemies come back so many times. And, of course, Picard is tired of dealing with the Borg. So, yeah, I like that, again, they're using the different parts of these series as they kind of collide to really create a really interesting and exciting story. So I think it's just working. What did you think of the art? You know, we talked about the fact that there is the switch in art there, and we both said we liked that. What did you end up thinking about the rest of the art? Because it's obviously very reminiscent of the work that we got on City on the Edge Forever series. What did you end up thinking? Do you feel like it worked? Did they get the characters right enough?
For the most part, I really enjoyed the art. I think a few parts of it kind of suffer from the same problems that the City on the Edge of Forever one did, which was you can kind of tell the scene that they grabbed the screenshot from to do the face. There's a couple parts where, you know, Riker's face or Picard's face, you're kind of like, oh, I know that episode. That's when this happened or that happened. But for the most part, overall, stylistically, I really liked this. I find sometimes when they do this kind of artistic route, they kind of sacrifice the look of the background or the sets or that kind of thing. But in this one, like, everything was spot on. When they're in sick bay, it looks like sick bay. When they're in the observation lounge, it looks like the observation lounge. Everything felt like it worked. And overall, like I said, it's a really beautiful looking comic for sure.
I love that there are some points when the characters kind of look dead on. Like the character, whether it was Riker or Worf or Data or, you know, any of the characters here. And then there are some times where it's a lot more of an artistic take on that character. And so I really did enjoy that. I'm with you. You know, there are some places where it's like, oh, I would have loved a little bit more detail in this, but on a whole, I think it's beautiful. I enjoy this type of comic where you can tell somebody is trying to create art, not just, you know, representation of what they've seen on TV. So that was really nice. I was just lamenting the fact that my two favorite redheads weren't on screen together, Dr. Beverly Crusher and Amy Pond, who's my favorite companion from Doctor Who. So I would have loved a scene where it was just them. But the artwork is really good here. I really liked it. But before we hit the ratings, I did want to kind of ask you. So we did the Trek Apes crossover, and now we've read the first part of the Doctor Who. And we're going to be getting this summer the crossover with Green Lantern. What do you think of this crossover idea? Do you think it's something you hope to see more of now that we've read one and a half of them? And we do know we have another one coming.
It's a bit of a tough question because for me, you know, the crossover thing is a bit of a gimmick, but if it's done really well and you have a really good story to base it on, then yes, go for it, do it. If you're doing it just to kind of mash them together and see what happens and you don't have a good story to go with it, or you're just doing it because, oh, we can get the audience from these guys and the audience from these guys and make a lot of money, then, you know, I think of Trek Apes, for example, and I don't feel like they came at that with a really good story and said, hey, here's a really good idea for a story. Let's do this crossover. I feel like they came at it with, let's do this crossover and come up with a story and try and make it work. Whereas in this case, and I could be wrong, but I feel like they had a really good story. They looked at the Borg and they looked at the Cybermen and said, hey, let's put these two together, make a really good story out of it, because I think this is a great idea. That's the feeling I get. And, you know, for me, when it comes down to any piece of fiction or any work of art, you know, have a good idea and go with it. Don't do it just because, oh, let's try this out and see if we can make money. No, do it because you have a great idea and you want to do it and you have an artistic vision and want to see where you can take it, kind of thing. So in this case, I liked it. In Trek Apes, I didn't like it. So I'm going to have to say, yeah, crossover is a good idea. Again, if you have a good idea, not a good idea if you just want to make some money.
Well, I would add something to that, but as Fat Amy says in Pitch Perfect, I think you crushed it. I think you said everything that I would say on that, and I completely agree with you. So, well, being at the end of the first part here of the Doctor Who Star Trek to the Next Generation crossover, what would be your rating?
Well, that's a tough question without seeing the whole story, but at this point, I'm really enjoying it. I have some questions. I feel like I have to go watch some episodes that feature the Cybermen because I don't know a lot about them. But at this point, I would have to say I'm getting a good 4 out of 5 smashed Borg cubes. I think they crushed it too.
Yeah, they really did. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, I am going to say that I don't have to see the end to say that this is good setup. You know, this really is. It feels like great setup. I enjoy the entire thing. There's nothing about this storyline that I don't like, except for maybe the small part where they go to the holodeck just because that's where they want to meet the Doctor, and that makes for a cool place to meet him. Other than that, it's brilliant. I love it. It sounds like the characters from both franchises, and yeah, they completely nail it. So I'd give this my two favorite redheads. So, ooh,
that's a very good rating.
This is fantastic.
Well, that was a pretty interesting discussion about the first part of, you know, this smashing together of two really great science fiction juggernauts, Star Trek and Doctor Who, coming together for an epic story. I really enjoyed this talk. How about you?
Dan, I did. I really can't. I think that I'm going to end up having to read this second part just to see how it ends before we end up doing it on the show, because I'm just so excited to actually see how it ends. And, nice. You know, what a huge difference from where we were with the Trexapes series, where I felt like I was having to pull my own teeth to just, you know, read it for the show just so we could talk a little bit about it, you know, in our news segment. So I'm very excited, you know, to see where this goes. And I'm really hoping, I'm crossing my fingers that Lantern, the Green Lantern series, will be a lot like this. And I think it might be just because of the universes that they are putting together, mm-hmm. where you can, you know, the little bit you know about Green Lantern, the little bit you know about Star Trek, okay, I can see how this would happen. And so, the same thing with Doctor Who. It just makes sense for these two universes to collide. And there's no reason for them really not to. And it actually does turn out to be a heck of a lot of fun. So, but it is not the only thing that we have been talking about here on Trek FM the past week. So here's a quick look at some of those other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And I think it was a very anticlimactic thing for a lot of people because they were expecting me to do, you know, my rah and ranting thing. But instead, I just was like, oh, that's depressing. Okay, bye.
Earl Grey.
They've now shifted into the Biff-controlled 1985.
Who got a hold of the almanac in order to turn yesterday's Enterprise?
The Enterprise C is the DeLorean in this scenario.
The orb.
I'd like to see the Borg assimilate Ferenginar, and then they would become bankers. You know, I could see...
Oh my gosh,
I could see
bankers.
Drones. Yeah, yeah.
The world's strictest bank ever. Right. I'm sorry, you have not paid your loan. You will be assimilated.
The nanites go into you.
Yes!
To the journey!
I kind of want something with a little bit more teeth. For some reason, like starting a garden just doesn't scream mirror universe to me.
Starting a garden doesn't have teeth.
The Ready Room.
I hate to put it this way, but maybe in some strange, twisted logical sense, if Archer just kind of flew on by and didn't help the colonists, the Enterprise D would have never crash landed on Viridian.
So it's not Troy's fault, it's Captain Archer's fault.
Literary Treks.
This is something that doesn't get done a lot in books because I don't think the time period's supposed to be that long.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you end up thinking about having a story take place before Where No Man's Gone Before?
Well, I thought personally that it was really cool.
The 602 Club.
My two favorite scenes in the film are Cap saying language and then the rest of what the jokes that go with that, and then Cap moving the hammer just enough, then Thor's face when he can't pick it up is priceless.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows, find out what we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You know you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, you can do a few things to really help us out, and it's really you that can make this show grow. And so by giving us a star rating and review, that helps us be more visible in iTunes. That helps us rise up the rankings so that when people are looking for podcasts to listen to, they'll see ours before others, as well as hitting that subscribe button. That helps out a lot as well. If you're not an Apple user, you can find the shows, though, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and, of course, stream and download the MP3 file from the website, and you can grab the RSS link as well. Best part about it, all those other places, they have places where you can review us there. You can share it with your friends. Again, it's you guys. If you have a passion for Star Trek books and want to share them with others, one of the ways you can do that is just help us share the show through your social media places and letting people know about your favorite podcasts. Another way that you can help keep all the shows coming to each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. You guys have heard us talk about this, and it is something that's really important. We are a listener-run network, and Dan and I just do this out of the joy of our own hearts for Star Trek books, but it also does cost us money for the books that we read, for the hosting, for the podcasts that we have on the network, all of these things. And so it's really through you guys that we can make that happen. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm and you'll find all the goals we have and some milestone contribution levels that come with some amazing perks. I've got our associate producers here on the show that actually get the show early. And so that's one of the goals you can reach. You can get exclusive content, producer credits, and you can even help with the content development for the shows we have. Just find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. You can contact us at trek.fm/contact. We'd love to hear from you. Your thoughts on the Doctor Who crossover, any of the things that we talk about, any of the interviews we have with authors. We'd love to get some feedback from you guys. Even maybe some things that you might want to see us talk about. You could leave us a voicemail. Go to the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. Of course, we're on Twitter at trekfm, Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm. There's the Babel Conference. It's an amazing place to have awesome discussions with us about the books we cover, with some of the authors are even there. In fact, Dave Gallanter is in the Babel Conference, was talking about the book with the author interview that we had last week, which is so much fun. And then, of course, we have the Goodreads group. If you guys kind of want an idea of what we've got coming up next for the show, bookshelves with all of the different books and comics we've covered and the shows they go to. You want to jump into some more Star Trek discussions we've got going over there. Another fantastic place to find us. And you can find us on Goodreads there through the show page. I really want to say thank you to the associate producers. Will Wynn, I love this guy. He's our content coordinator here on the network. And he actually found Trek FM through our show, through Literary Treks, and that's one of the reasons he is the sponsor here. And then he became a patron, and now he is the associate producer of The Orb, Earl Grey, and Literary Treks. He's also our content coordinator, as I said, and he also hosts Warp 5 now with Norman Lau. And I want to thank Ken Tripp as well. Without him, we just couldn't do this show. Thank you so much for being an associate producer here on Literary Treks. Now, Dan, when you're not trying to figure out why you're in a holodeck and that blue box isn't disappearing, where can we find you?
Well, Matthew, you can find me online. My website is www.treklit.com, and there I review Star Trek novels, both old and new, a lot of the same ones we talk about on the show here. I'm on Twitter at Treklit Reviews, and I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/treklitreviews. And of course, I'm hanging out at the Babel Conference, lurking, reading posts, and occasionally commenting and posting things of my own. And Matthew, if you're not questioning Starfleet on its allocations of resources when it gives the Enterprise its fifth holodeck upgrade, where can we find you?
Damn those guys. I mean, I'm over here on the Potemkin, and we can't get one freaking holodeck. Come on. Come on! God. Well, of course, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I also do The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. The 602 Club, we pick a great new geeky topic each week, and we talk about that. We've had some fun shows recently. We talked through the Supergirl trailer and the Legends of Tomorrow trailer that had come out, Narnia, Ultron, I mean, just a myriad of things. Have some great shows coming up. Check us out there. You can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, live long and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.